It is Thursday, March 21st, and just an update on the women's cricket series that's on at the moment. In case you missed it, England did beat the White Ferns by 27 runs on Tuesday, but it's fine because you know what? There's another T20 showdown tomorrow on Friday at Nelson's Saxton Oval. Up the whiffs! Does that work? Combining white and ferns? Whiff? Whiffs? No? If you've got a better option, please do flick me an email. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is What's Worth Talking About. If you're like me and the heaters have come on already, we're getting some expert insight into whether or not this cold snap is here to stay. What could the GDP figures out later today tell us about how well the economy's doing? We're delving into the advantages of having a diverse workforce that includes people who are neurodivergent, and the Easter egg that was treasured but not eaten for decades. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Breaking news, it's cold. At least it's colder. It seems that this week the weatherman decided summer's over and it's time for layers, heaters and even a rainy spell or two. So is this it now until we get to spring, which by definition, by the way, is September 23rd. That is a very long time away. Here now to hopefully tell us that's not the case, but regardless deliver us the latest on the country's weather is Chris Brandolino from NIWA. Chris, how long is this cold snap going to last?
Oh, kia ora, Imogen. Look, can I start off with pushing back? Now, we can begin spring September 1st, so it depends on which step.
Okay.
For example, today is the first day of astronomical autumn. But if you go by the meteorological definition, autumn began back on the 1st of March. So depends which definition you use. So if you want to be, if you want spring to come in soon, and who doesn't, let's go with September 1st.
We'll take that. And so is the cold settling in now till then?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's been a cool month. We'll see how the month pans out. We're only about halfway through, maybe just beyond that. But this may be one of the few months out of the past 4 years where temperatures have been cooler than average from a national lens, from a national perspective. So, and there's probably more cool air to come. So a huge swing going from 1, 2, 3, 4 degrees all the way up to lower 20s. And that's kind of, you know, the sun's still got some giddy up. So if we get the right day where there's sunshine, it can still feel quite warm.
Were these chillier temperatures at the beginning of the week felt nationwide, or were there some pockets where people didn't really need that extra blanket?
I think probably up north. I mean, look, I'm in Auckland, and we're a fragile bunch in Auckland.
No comment.
So it certainly was cooler for us than we're used to, but when you compare Auckland's temperature to, say, Middlemarch, I mean, it was not even close, you know. But and Auckland benefits in the autumn because we have water all around us. We're an isthmus, and it takes longer for that water to cool off. I am hopeful that as we work away into, say, maybe the end of the month, as we get towards, say, the very last few days of March, and especially the first few days of April, we could see a meaningful warm spell for a good chunk of the country. So for those who do like the warm autumn temperatures, maybe some Indian summer, which, by the way, there is a technical definition. Indian summer is actually a Native American term, where I'm from. It is defined as the first period of unusual warm weather, but after your first frost. You need to have your first frost. So we could have some Indian-type summer weather coming up maybe early April.
What sort of winter are we looking likely to be in for?
I knew you were going to ask that. Would you be happy with a forecast of dark nights and bright days?
If that's all you've got, I mean, I'll take it, Chris.
Look, the short answer, it's unclear. But look, if we're trying to read some tea leaves here and trying to get a little bit of insight, we are transitioning out of El Nino. So when you hear these words El Nino, or you hear these words La Nina, those are climate drivers. And simply, quite simply, a climate driver is, who's driving Mother Nature's car? Who's at the steering wheel? Because if you know who's driving the car, you can kind of get an idea which direction you're going to head in. And El Nino is, we're walking away from that. It'll take some time for the effects of El Nino to stop. It's likely to be dry for the next few months. Look, I know you and I are talking temperatures now, and rightly so, but we are concerned with dryness. There's not going to be a lot of rain over the next month, and that may last a bit longer. I'm not saying it won't rain at all, but what I'm saying is that when you look at what normally falls in March and April, and even beyond, it's probably going to be less than that for a good chunk of the country. So we have to see if that's going to persist into winter. There is a concern that could happen. I can tell you this, it's unlikely that winter will be cooler or colder than usual. Okay. Winter is always cold. That's, you know, our nights are long or days are short. That's how we get cold temperatures.
Funny that.
Yeah, isn't it?
And a chilly start for Easter for most of us. Is that what you're saying as well?
Yeah, look, it's obviously 7-10 days away, but I think the first 2 days of the four-day weekend, so Friday, Good Friday, and Saturday, look to be the most undesirable. So put differently, Easter Sunday, Easter Monday, probably the better of the four-day weekend, the better 2 days.
Chris Brandolino from NIWA, always great to chat weather with you. Thank you for your time. And I'm just going to quickly be the bearer of some cold and dark weather news as well. Daylight savings ends on Sunday, the 7th of April. As a wise man once said, winter is coming. Would you agree, Chris?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's the nail in the coffin for summer right there.
After all of that, let me know if it's been colder where you are. We'll have a poll up on the Stuff Instagram page. It's going to be a very simple question today. Head to NZ Stuff and riddle me this. Is it colder where you are at the moment? Yes, no, let me know if we're all shivering together. And if you've got further details you'd like to share, you already know what to do. Flick me an email, newsable@stuff.co.nz. Later today, we will get a set of figures that'll tell us about how the economy is faring. The gross domestic product, or GDP, is important because it gives information about the size of the economy and its performance. So, what might we learn in the figures out from Stats New Zealand a bit later today? Well, with us now is economy whiz Brad Olson, Infometrics Principal Economist. Welcome back, Brad. Always great to chat.
Always great to appear.
Brad, what have recent GDP figures indicated about the country's economy?
Well, of course, the Reserve Bank has wanted to slow the economy. Inflation's been too high. Too much extra demand has been pushing those prices up. So the latest GDP data we got for the September 2023 quarter did show a decline in economic activity. GDP was smaller in September than it was in June. That was, you know, good news in a sense from the Reserve Bank's point of view. They were wanting to see a bit of a pullback. And we're expecting that we could see something similar with the figures out today. But one of the big challenges at the moment is that, the economy might be broadly the same size, maybe slightly smaller, but it comes after the most record population growth we've seen in like 70 years or so, up 2.8%. So although the economy might be roughly the same size, the amount of the economy, the slice of the pie that each Kiwi has is increasingly smaller.
So what is the prediction that we will see in today's figures?
Well, Infometrics is currently expecting we could see economic activity fall 0.2% quarter on quarter. So December would be 0.2% smaller than September. I know that some of the other bank economists are sort of either flat 0.0%, no change, that maybe slightly up 0.2% up. But we're talking pretty narrow margins here, again, in the context of pretty large population growth. So although that headline figure expected to be either side of nothing, the per capita figures, that per person figures, are likely to be a lot darker.
And how important are today's figures for everyday life? People are struggling, we know that. Cost of living, businesses struggling too.
Look, economists love GDP figures. To be honest, for day-to-day Kiwis, it doesn't mean a lot. I'm not expecting large numbers of people pour to the Stats NZ site, but it does tell you something about the structure, and it gives us some clues about how much pressure and capacity there might be in the economy. That will have implications for inflation, and those will have implications for how people's interest rates trend. So indirectly important, not the most direct economic indicator most people care about.
Here's a challenge for everyone. Let's make the Stats New Zealand website crash because we're all heading to it to find out. Let's do some crystal ball gazing, always fun. Let's talk about the next set of figures. What do you reckon the direction of the economy is looking like, up or down?
Well, in a sense, we're still thinking it's starting to or continuing to pull back. Spending figures don't look great, again, in the context of more and more people. But we're also worried that, again, those inflation figures might well be not as good as everyone had been expecting. Some of that looks like a bit of Taylor Swiftflation coming in, the likes of 25% year-on-year increases in overseas accommodation costs because everyone, all the Swifties went over, they paid expensive plane tickets, they paid for expensive hotels. So I think we're sort of in a place where we're likely to see the economy pretty limited, pretty restrained in 2024. But you sort of look out maybe 18 months' time, 24 months, sort of 2 years away, if the Reserve Bank gets enough confidence that inflation is under control and they can start to drop back those interest rates a bit, you might see a little bit stronger economic growth, but that won't be quick and it won't be anytime soon.
We know how important confidence is when it comes to the economy. And earlier this week on Newsable, we talked about how some of our politicians talk pretty negatively about New Zealand, including those who are in government. Does that constant negativity have an impact on the economy? And do we have a crisis of confidence here in New Zealand?
It certainly can create some challenges, although it's interesting because you're completely right. We talk things down a lot at the moment. To be fair, that's because they don't look great. interest rates are still at a pretty high level. We haven't seen, per capita growth decline like this since the GFC. So some of the numbers we're seeing sort of, do back up why we're talking in such a negative fashion. But it's interesting. You ask businesses and the business confidence surveys, the consumer confidence surveys, and things are not nearly as dark. And I do wonder if part of that is because at the moment people know it's tough, but they've got a bit more confidence about how tough it is. I think people are going, I know it's tough, it's going to be tough for a while, but at least I can now plan around that because I've got more confidence of how bad it is.
Money man Brad Olson from Infometrics, thank you as always for helping us understand a little bit better the economy.
Thank you for having me.
Would you spend hundreds of dollars on a piece of food that was 85 years old? I only asked because that's exactly what's happened this week in the UK. I'll tell you more in just a tick, but if you haven't already, chuck Newsable a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform to make sure you get every new episode sent straight to your phone. Hopefully, these days, we are all more aware of the differences between the people who make up our communities, including when it comes to what is referred as neurodiversity. The term refers to a wide range of neurological conditions, including autism, ADHD, dyslexia, and other brain wiring differences. Around the world, March is Neurodiversity Celebration Month, and employers are starting to recognise the advantages of including neurodiverse individuals in their workforces. A company that supports this work is Divergent Thinking, and we're joined now by co-founder Anton Ashcroft, who is a registered psychologist. Anton, thank you for being here.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
When we talk about employers starting to recognise the advantages of having neurodiverse individuals in the workforce, what sort of skills are we referring to here? What skills are being recognised?
Well, it's a whole range of skills. An international company called Gallagher did some research when they predicted that by 2027, 25% of the Fortune 500 businesses will be actively recruiting for these neurodiverse talents. And they have a range of different strengths. It depends what neurodiversity you're talking about. If you're talking about ADD or ADHD brains, they're often really good at the creativity, the entrepreneurial, the risk insensitivity. So they'll jump in and try and do new things. And autistic brains are known for their amazing analytical thinking. So being able to focus on a task for 10, 12 hours a day, outperform their neurotypical colleagues, but also work in a very logical, very analytical, very data detail or systems heavy way. Wells Fargo, for example, who employed 235 autistic brains, and 3 years later, 99% of the people who applied and got the jobs were still in the job. So there's a high degree of loyalty that can come with some autistic brains once they get a job. And also JP Morgan employed over a 3.5 year period, 150 autistic brains. And they found out that those brains would perform at up to 150% compared to their neurotypical colleagues in terms of output. And they also learnt in about half the amount of time.
This feeds, of course, into the concept that more diverse workforces are actually more creative and more agile. Are employers embracing this here in New Zealand?
Definitely. We started the business just over 3 years ago. And when we first started the business, we were really pushing against a very closed door. People didn't even know what neurodiversity was, let alone start wanting to be open to the idea of recruiting autistic and ADHD and dyslexic brains. I mean, I think the other thing that we're selling at the moment is the idea that everybody is neurodiverse. Every single brain on this planet processes the world in its own unique way. No one lives in the real world. We just live in our version of it. So even already established workforces will have a whole range of talents that at the moment they may not be making the most of.
Do employers here in New Zealand know how to support diverse staff needs, and are they also equipped and able to do so?
They are getting much, much better at it. We are in talks with a lot of organisations at the moment, and we're supporting quite a few different organisations. There are now more services out there that are offering consultancy and support for introducing how to support the neurodiverse in the workplace, but it's still quite early days in New Zealand.
Anton Ashcroft, wonderful to speak, and happy Neurodiversity Month.
Thank you very much, Imogen. Nice to speak to you.
Seeing as it's almost Easter, I could not let today's episode finish without sharing this wee story with you. An 85-year-old Easter egg that survived World War II has just been sold at auction. You've got questions, I know, and don't worry, I am here now to give you the answers. This Mary Mary quite contrary Easter egg, that's the name that was on the box, was given to 9-year-old Sybil Cook in 1939, but because the war was looming, Sybil's wise uncle advised her to ration her chockey egg instead of eating it all at once because chocolate was likely to become scarce. Sybil only went and took that one step further, and instead of rationing the egg, Sybil simply did not eat it. Sybil held on to the egg. She kept it safe. She took it with her when she left home and got married, and apparently kept it on a shelf in her bedroom all these years. It's still unbroken. It's still in its decorative, shiny blue wrapper. It's still in its box. Sybil never ate a single bite. Now, unfortunately, Sybil died, aged 91 in 2021, but the Iggy went under the hammer this week in the UK and sold at auction for just over $400 New Zealand. It's quite a bit of quiche for a chocolate egg that you don't want to eat, but a lovely story nonetheless. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and no chocolate egg that falls into my hands is surviving uneaten for 85 years. I'll tell you that for free.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.